The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning glory, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I am back in California and glad indeed to be back here. My first guest today, Aaron Schrockman. Mr. Schrockman, welcome. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Aaron is the executive director of PolitiFact. He oversees PolitiFact operations, development, and revenue. He assists in PolitiFact's journalistic mission, among his other duties. Aaron has been with PolitiFact since 2010 and served most recently as the editor of Pundit Fact, a website dedicated to checking claims by pundits, columnists, bloggers, and the hosts and guests of talk shows. Aaron is a 2016-17 Reynolds Fellow at the University of Missouri, and he co-teaches a class on political fact-checking at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. Aaron graduated from Indiana University. May I call you Aaron?
You may, of course.
Aaron, it is tradition on this program to begin with two questions for a new guest. Have you read The Looming Tower?
I haven't, but I'm aware of your question, so I would say I was a Bob Baer guy, so I loved his memoir, Became Syriana, and I enjoyed very much his work writing about Iran. Made me learn a lot about the Middle East and all the issues that we have there as understanding that place in the world.
But you haven't read The Looming Tower?
Correct, I have not.
Was Alger Hiss a communist spy?
I think that as a fact checker, I have to believe, look at the weight of the evidence, and I would say the weight of the evidence is that he spied for the Soviet Union, yes.
How about Kim Philby?
Kim Philby?
Kim Philby.
I don't know.
How about Peter Smollett?
Peter Smollett's name is not familiar to me.
How about Jeff Dawson?
Jeff Dawson, name's not familiar to me.
He was not a communist, the other two were.
Okay.
What year did you graduate from Indiana University?
That'd be 2003, sir.
Okay, and how old are you now?
I'm 35.
What did you study at IU?
What did I study at IU? I studied political science and journalism.
And where are you from originally?
Pennsylvania, a town called Pottsville.
Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Correct, yeah.
Are you a Steelers fan?
I'm an Eagles fan, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Served a figure. What jobs have you held since graduating before going to PolitiFact in 2010?
Sure. I've always been a journalist since 2003. In fact, I love it or hate it. The only job that wasn't journalism that I've ever had was I worked one summer at a golf course, getting people their golf carts. But other than that, journalists always.
At which papers or outlets?
Oh, sure. I spent a summer at the Indianapolis Star upon graduation, and then since then I've been at the Tampa Bay Times covering government and politics, local government for the first handful of years, and state politics for the second handful. The Tampa Bay Times, as your listeners may or may not know, is the newspaper that created PolitiFact in 2007. So I then transitioned over to PolitiFact in 2010.
And who owns the Tampa Bay Times?
Tampa Bay Times is owned by the Poynter Institute. It's a school for journalists based in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Is it a not-for-profit institution?
It is, yes. Mm-hmm.
Does it receive grants?
Yes, it does. Yes, of course.
Do you know who its largest grantors are?
I don't know for sure. I believe its largest grantor is probably the Knight Foundation.
Any other ones that might alert anyone on the left or the right as to the bias of the organization?
Sure. I know the Poynter has received funding from the Omidyar Network, and I know it has received funding from, I believe, the McCormick Foundation, perhaps the MacArthur Foundation. It may have received others. I apologize. I work for there is a bright line. I work for PolitiFact, which is part of the Tampa Bay Times, which is for-profit. It is owned by a non-profit, the Poynter Institute, so I do not know the inner workings of their finances.
Oh, so you work for a for-profit. I misunderstood that. You work for a for-profit paper.
So It's super complicated. The owner of the Tampa Bay Times is a guy named Nelson Poyer. And
what's his name? Boyer?
Nelson Poynter.
Poynter, okay.
And he, when he died, he decided not to give the paper to his daughters and said entrusted it to a school that he created. It was not called the Poynter Institute then, but it was eventually called the Poynter Institute. And so the Poynter Institute is a nonprofit, but it owns the for-profit Tampa Bay Times. And so it is a hard thing for some people to understand, but it was set up deliberately so that the Tampa Bay Times would have ownership, is owned by a nonprofit, therefore it doesn't have the corporate pressures of, say, some of the larger media houses, Gannett, Chicago the Tribune Company, papers like that, groups like that.
Do we have a public statement of the amount of revenue that the Tampa Bay Times makes each year? Is it a public company?
It is not public, no.
It is not public. All right. Are you familiar with the acronym FEHB?
FEHB.
F is in Frank, E is in Edward, H is in Hugh, B is in boy. FEHB.
No, I'm not.
Are you familiar with the term adverse selection?
Adverse selection, sure.
How do you define that?
Well, I mean, to me, adverse selection, in the context of fact-checking or the context of, you got to help me out, Hugh.
In the context of healthcare.
Oh, in the context of healthcare. I don't necessarily know what the definition is based on. So enlighten me, sir.
I just was wondering if you had one. You don't.
I know what I'm here to talk about. I'm curious what you're here to talk about.
I'm doing the interview. I'm finding out what you know about healthcare. So adverse selection is a big term in healthcare.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead.
But you don't know what it means.
I'm not going to play this game. We can talk about the fact check that we wrote about you. We could talk about
not a game, facts. Just an interview. It's okay not to know things. I say all the time, but I don't know things. So if you don't know, it's not a game. Just it's okay. Don't worry.
I'm not.
Okay.
Continue. Yeah.
Your Twitter feed has on it the title "The Bad Boy of Political Journalism." Why?
It's a joke.
Why?
Why?
Yeah. Why is it a joke?
Oh, so that's for all honesty, that's the card my wife got me for my first wedding anniversary this month. The picture is of me sitting down doing a TV interview with shorts and flip-flops because I work most of the time in Florida, and that's the name she put on the card.
So you don't consider yourself to be the bad boy of political journalism?
If you want to help start the movement, Hugh, I guess we could try.
No, I just wanted to know what you think of yourself as.
Yeah, I think of myself as the executive director of PolitiFact.
All right. Who did you vote for president in 2016?
Every person's vote is their own private decision. So, yeah, of course.
I voted for Trump. Who did you vote for?
I'm not going to tell you who I voted for, nor should any journalist.
Oh, that's a value statement.
Sure.
Why not?
Because journalists have a right, have the ability to vote just like any other American. But journalists should strive to be objective in their complete public face.
And so non-transparent to their readers. Because what you're being is non-transparent to your readers there.
Well, but what does that matter? What does it matter who I voted for?
It would be their readers might find it of use in judging your fairness and accuracy, objectivity, and willingness to hear the other side.
What if I said I didn't vote? What would that say?
That would tell you different things, that you might be apathetic and indifferent to the results of an election. It would tell you something. It would be a fact. And so you did vote, but you will not tell me who you voted for.
Of course I won't, no.
Well, many journalists do. Many journalists have. Many chose not to. Dana Milbake doesn't vote. It's all over the map. It depends on who you talk to. You're among those who refuse to be transparent.
But you, Dana Milbake's a columnist. In all honesty, he's not a news journalist.
Dana Milbake's not a journalist.
He's not a news journalist.
All right, let me ask you about 2012. Who did you vote for in 2012? That's a long time ago.
Hugh, I'm going to tell you, I voted for Republicans for president and Democrats for president.
That doesn't tell me anything. I'm just asking about 2012.
That doesn't tell you anything? That's not a fact.
Did you vote in 2012?
Okay. This is enlightening to your viewers, your listeners, I'm sure. My first presidential election was 2000, so that's 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012, 2016. I voted for Republicans and Democrats in those years. I will continue to vote for Republicans and Democrats. I don't necessarily find, to be honest, the political party of a person to be to say much about who they are as a candidate.
I know. I'm just rolling through factual-based questions to set up the difference between facts and opinions. And so is 2012, did you vote?
I did vote, yes.
You did. Did you vote for Obama or Romney?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, that's fine. In 2008, did you vote?
Yes.
Did you vote for Obama or for McCain?
I'm not going to tell you.
Are you a registered Democrat, Republican, or an independent?
It's in Florida. It's no party affiliation.
Is that what you are?
Record. Correct, yes.
Okay. And do you favor abortion rights?
Did I say that again?
Do you favor abortion rights?
Honestly, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to describe all of my political views. I'll tell you, as a journalist, my job is to cover things independently, objectively, and I think
just a fact question, not a judgment. Just a fact question. Do you own a gun?
I'm not going to answer these questions.
That's a fact question again, though, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Okay.
Yes,
do you belong to any religion?
I don't see the point of any of these questions other than you establishing you're asking questions of fact that I'm not going to answer. So
that's right. And that those facts, would you agree with me that those facts would help you be more transparent to your audience if you answered them?
My particular views are irrelevant. Every fact check that we publish at PolitiFact, 14,000 since 2007, includes a list of every source of people we spoke to. It includes hyperlinks to any primary source. Everything that we do is on the record and transparent. We do not use
except you. You're not on the record and transparent. You yourself, your views are not on the record and transparent. Your votes are not on the record and transparent. Your political ideology is not on the record and transparent.
That has nothing to do with what we wrote.
We disagree, but let's move on. Does PolitiFact have published standards of journalistic conduct and ethics?
Sure.
Are they posted?
Yes.
Where?
We have an About Us page that describes in detail our methodology, our funding, and our process.
I looked at that page and could not find a code of conduct and ethics.
What's your specific question? Of course, every employee and every journalist has ethics and conduct codes that they must follow.
But are they posted in so that people know what they are?
What is your question?
Is there a best practice about contacting the subject of a story that anyone at PolitiFact is writing?
Thank you. Now we're getting there. Okay. So I assume you're...
My question is there a best practice about contacting the subject of a story that is posted? That's my question.
Yeah. So at PolitiFact, every fact check, all 14,000 over 9 years now, excuse me. The first thing we do is researching.
Interview. It's an interview. And so it's not a trick question. I'm just asking, is there a standard about contacting the subject of a story that is posted?
The standard is that we reach out to the speaker of the claim. Yes.
And does it have any particulars about reaching out to the speaker of a claim and what that means?
It means many different things to many different people.
So there is no standard.
The standard is to reach out to the speaker of the claim.
But without any specifics as to what is an adequate amount of time or a number of efforts to contact that individual.
Hugh, I think I would say this. I think the answer that if I email hugh@hughhewitt.com, I should have an
You're trying to skip the discussion of standards and not answering my question. So there are no specific... I'm going to get to all this. I'm just trying to set up the standard, which is useful to the listener. You don't have a published standard about reaching out. You may have think whatever you did with me was adequate, but you have no standard to get which to measure it and for me to say, objectively, you did not meet your own standard since you do not have one posted, correct?
What would your standard?
It's not a debate. It's an interview. I'm just really trying to figure out how PolitiFact operates. That's all I'm trying to do here.
We reach out to the speaker every claim we make, and in 80 to 85% of those cases, they respond to us. So I think our standard, whatever it is met very regularly.
But it may vary from person to person, depending upon your reporter and the story.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think we don't call Donald Trump and ask him for the information behind his facts. We speak to the press office.
Is it important to you that you talk to the subject of your story?
Of course. We prefer to talk to the subject of every story whenever we
How important is it to the story that you talk to the subject of the story?
It is not critical.
It is not critical?
No.
Okay.
We evaluate the evidence with or without the cooperation of the subject.
Well, that's cooperation is different, but yeah. Contacting is different from cooperation, is it not?
Of course. And, okay. And as I said, it is a standard to attempt to contact the speaker of every claim.
Okay. Now let's go to that standard. Is it PolitiFact standard to survey a subject's Twitter feed and reach out to them thereby?
You know what? In some cases, we have done that, and I'll tell you, what we found is that we actually took a lot of criticism for reaching out to someone via Twitter because we were told that that is not a reasonable standard. In fact, you can read some long articles in the Daily Caller about how we failed to meet the standard of reaching out to somebody specifically by using Twitter.
Would it not depend upon whether that individual is, in fact, a prolific user of Twitter in response to journalists thereby?
I would assume, but that would require us to know the ins and outs of every person in the world and their use of Twitter and their habits, yes.
And could you quickly establish that within, say, an hour to 2 hours of deciding you needed to talk to someone?
What I would understand is that a person who has access to Twitter should have access to an email at the same time.
But if someone was on Twitter, as I was a subject of a PolitiFact story on Sunday for 3 hours, right, responding to journalist questions. Did your journalist, Allison Graves, check my Twitter feed at all and send me a question on Twitter?
She did not.
Ought she to have done so?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Ought she to have done so?
She emailed Hugh@HughHewitt.com.
And she also emailed my booking producer, but she did not check my Twitter feed in which I was engaged in conversations with journalists. So my question is, ought she to have done so?
I don't think that has to be the standard to tweet at somebody when there is an email called Hugh@HughHewitt.com. I think there's a reasonable expectation that is your email account.
And let me ask you, if you had known that I was online talking to three journalists, would you have tweeted at me?
If I knew that, of course. If the answer was we knew that was the best way to reach you, and going forward, of course, that's how we'll reach you. It is very much our intent to try to reach the speaker of every claim. That won't change.
How long has Allison Graves worked for you?
It's an irrelevant question, but you can find out the answer yourself. You don't need me to tell you.
Well, you're the boss.
Yeah, of course.
So it's just an objective question. I'm trying to figure out if she's a young reporter.
What's the meaning of that? What's the relevance of that?
I will let the audience judge that. But to me, a young reporter is apt to overlook obvious ways of reaching a source and to have a lower standard about the importance of doing so.
In this case, I can guarantee you that it's not what happened. No.
So tell people exactly then what did happen. She wrote two emails, correct?
Correct, yes.
She watched me on Meet the Press, correct? And you have
correct.
Read the original Allison Graves post.
Yeah, of course.
Are you satisfied with her effort to contact me?
I am.
Was it accurate for her to write in that post, "We have reached out to Hewitt through his radio program, but did not hear back"?
Yes.
Would you explain what she did?
Sure. She sent an email to. Hugh, you've had PolitiFact on the show in the past. You had a writer, John Greenberg, who fact-checked you as well, and you took issue with that fact-check as well, two of the three fact-checks. The one you didn't, by the way, was objectively false, so I find that interesting. But the listeners can decide for that for themselves. What happened in this case is that email account, which your staff used to converse with us to book us on the show, was the only contact that we had. So we used that contact because we know you spoke with us through that conduit to email.
Did you read the email that she sent to that email?
I did, yes.
I want to read it now. It was sent to my booker@HughHewitt.com. She wrote, let me find it here. "My name is Allison Graves. I am a reporter with PolitiFact. I am fact-checking Hugh Hewitt, who said, quote, 'Obamacare is in a death spiral,' quote, during a segment on Meet the Press. We are looking for evidence or backup material to help support that claim. During the segment, he referenced the New York Times article that quotes the president of Aetna, but I am unable to find it. Could you see what story he was referencing? In fact, was she looking for evidence or backup material to help support my claim?"
Yes, of course she was, yes.
"Did she find any evidence or backup material to help support my claim?"
I mean, I think she found cases where people described that Obamacare is in a death spiral. She was unable to find the specific article you were referencing because you referenced it incorrectly.
No, I didn't. Actually, if you read the transcript, it's two references that she conflated that are quite easy for most people to see. But did she Google Aetna and death spiral?
You said the president of Aetna, it's the chairman and CEO, and it was not in the New York Times, as you also know. It was originally probably in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, I have No, it was actually originally in the Washington Post where I found it, but there are 100 of them. Did she Google Aetna and death spiral?
She Googled the words that you presented back to her, and she was unable to find the article that you were referencing.
She never found the Aetna article that the president of Aetna said Obamacare is in a death spiral and more insurers will flee in 2018, said Aetna CEO Mark Bertoloni this week. She never found
correct.
That.
We did not locate that story because, again, the evidence that you, that's why we reached out to your staff to present us the link to the article. I think we're missing a fundamental flaw here in the system. We exactly tried to get the article that you were
I
trying
did,
to
actually
reference.
You're reading the transcript incorrectly. You're conflating two references. But if you had Googled Aetna,
What's the New York Times reference?
The New York Times reference, I have it here, is to a different story by Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger Katz, which includes the assertions.
The same author who wrote the story headlined "Obamacare is not in a death spiral."
No, actually, it's grading Obamacare successes, failures, and incompletes.
She wrote a later article on March 15th that said Obamacare is not in a death spiral.
I am looking at the grading Obamacare successes, failures, and incompletes, which she would have found out had she contacted me on Twitter. And in it are contained these assertions. Health insurance remains very expensive. Yeah. The healthcare system remains complex and confusing. If you like your plan, you can't always keep your plan or your doctor.
What's it says, let me
finish for a second. I'm giving the audience an idea of the articles that a rookie would have found. It also says it's 2 cents to tell whether we know if the law made America healthier, and it's unclear whether the law what the law has done to national health spending. Now, had your reporter Googled Aetna and death spiral, she would have found, and you would have found, 15 articles on Obamacare death spiral by the Aetna CEO Mark Bertoloni, which conclude that it is in a death spiral. And in addition,
so we're clear to you. The articles don't conclude it's in a death spiral. They say that the Aetna CEO and chairman says it's in a death spiral. But what evidence does he have it's in a death spiral? I think we should.
In the article that I have, for Aetna, between 1% and 5% of its customers account for 50% of its costs, depending on the market, Bertoloni said. And in many places, there is little competition and risk sharing, he said. There isn't any risk sharing going on in Nebraska. It will cost us a lot of money. There isn't enough money in the ACA today. It is as it's structured, even with its fees and taxes, to support the population that needs to be served. So that's what he said. I'm getting to the point that it was very easy to find if you Google Aetna and death spiral. But your reporter did not do so.
But you didn't. You didn't say it correctly.
I did. Your reporter did not listen carefully to the transcript. And a third-year journalism student would Google Aetna and death spiral because I want to play for you. I'm going to go out of order here, Adam. If we can play the Meet the Press conversation in its entirety, please. Have you listened to this, by the way, Aaron?
I have, of course.
Okay, here it is for the audience. Cut number two.
Obamacare is the timeshare that the Democrats bought that they cannot admit the cost of, that they keep telling themselves was a good idea. It is in a death spiral. Joanne and I have had many disagreements about that. But it is in a death spiral.
It's not the definition of an economic death spiral.
The New York Times yesterday pointed out that there are the president of Aetna, that you will lose coverage in many places in America for everyone. And that is, to me, a death spiral for those people. Joy disagrees. I know she should jump in here.
Let's not take Aetna's word for it, because we know that Aetna lied. We had already a federal judge say that they lied. Aetna wanted to do a merger with Humana. They were told no. They pulled out for other reasons. Insurance companies raise premiums. It's what they do. That's what they're in business to do. But the Congressional Budget Office has made it quite clear the Affordable Care Act is not collapsing, not in a death spiral, just not.
Now, yesterday you tweeted, Aaron, that I was corrected in an attempt to prop up the PolitiFact story on Meet the Press. Who was I corrected by?
Chuck Todd.
Chuck Todd said it's not in an economic death spiral yet. Did you note that?
You said is in a death spiral.
I said that, but Chuck Todd said it's not the definition of an economic death spiral yet.
Yes, of course.
So that he did not actually correct me. We were debating it. And
excuse me one second. You said Obamacare is in a death spiral.
It is. It is in a death spiral. It is 100% in a death spiral.
Then you quoted the CEO chairman of Aetna who said people will lose their their health care.
No, he said it is in a death spiral. That's what he said. I said it, and he said it.
What is your evidence?
Now, it's an interview, not a debate. It's an interview about PolitiFact, not about the death spiral, about which I'm completely confident for reasons I'll come to. But I want to go back to your assertion that I was corrected. Is that fair for you to describe me being corrected when Chuck Todd says it's not the definition of an economic death spiral yet, and Joy then cites Aetna, debunks Aetna, and your reporter doesn't find the Aetna quote?
I don't know. Joy Reid has nothing to do with this. Chuck Todd said what you said was inaccurate. You said it.
No, that's not what he said. That's not what I know Chuck very well. He said that's not the definition of an economic death spiral yet, because Chuck knows it's a political term that refers to a collapse.
Death spiral is a very specific term in terms of health care, and that. And I hope we'll explain that to the listeners.
Let's get to that because for someone who doesn't know what the FEHB is or adverse selection, you're awfully sure about what a health industry term is. Death spiral, she wrote in the original story, is a health industry term. There is no footnote attached to that. Can you tell me what is the footnote that you were referring to there?
What do you mean, a footnote? So a death spiral is, what a death spiral is, and this is actually very important. A death spiral is a really simple kind of concept, but it's actually it's when healthy people leave the pool because insurance is too high. What happens is the people who remain are generally unhealthy. I mean, all relatively, of course. And so what happens, premiums rise further and faster. As a result, more healthy people leave the pool. And so at the end, you're only left with the unhealthiest of the unhealthy, and therefore the whole system collapses because the larger the pool, the better.
Specifically, she writes, a death spiral occurs when shrinking enrollment leads to a deteriorating risk pools. Do we have deteriorating risk pools in many states in the union?
So this is also really important to note. The answer is we actually don't.
What?
We don't. Okay. So this is not a debate, right?
I just want to make sure I heard you clearly. You're saying we do not have shrinking enrollment and deteriorating risk pools in many states.
You're changing the question.
No, that's your story. Your story says a death spiral occurs.
You asked about deteriorating risk pools. You didn't ask about shrinking enrollment. Of course, the answer is in 2017, enrollment is down. First of all, it's important to know that we're talking about the individual market prices, the non-group plans. Individual enrollment is down about 500,000 enrollees. But what's really important to note and critical to note is when we're talking about who's leaving, we don't have all the information yet. And in fact, the information that we do have suggests that the risk pool is not deteriorating. Here's the best evidence of it. The Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services says 26% of the invincible group, 18 to 34, was enrolled in plans in 2016, the same percentage that is enrolled in plans in 2017. Further, the other thing that's important is to realize why people are leaving. We don't have good answers on that, but one of the things that we do know is that most of the people in non-group plans have not seen a premium increase of any substance thanks to the tax credits that are part of the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act.
But I know you got some talking points there, and that's interesting, but I want to go back to the fact that she said it's a health industry term.
I apologize. You take over.
It's a health industry term, and it's not actually. It's a term of art. And you say
it's not a term of art.
You also say specifically a death spiral occurs when shrinking enrollment leads to a deteriorating risk pool. That's your statement. Or when healthy people leave the plan due to cost. Have healthy people left the plan due to cost?
There's in some statistically significant way, there's not evidence of that.
All right. Now then, is the president of Aetna, I got your record, I got your answer. Is the president of Aetna an expert?
The president of Aetna, how many insurance marketplaces is Aetna participating in?
I don't know. I'm just asking you, do you think he's an expert? The CEO. The CEO of that. Is he an expert?
Correct. The CEO and chairman of Aetna.
Is he an expert?
He is certainly an expert. Yes, of course I
Okay. So can he make materially misleading statements without consequence, given that it is a publicly traded company?
I mean, it's defined consequence.
You don't understand the subject, the question of what a publicly traded CEO can say about the what's going on in his company falsely? If it's out for your radar, I'm going to the probity. The value of his statements are quite high, given his expertise and the fact that he's in a regulated situation in which he cannot mislead investors.
So the issue here, Hugh, is that Aetna, as you know, is not participating in the exchanges in most states in this country.
No, the issue is that an expert, the CEO of a huge health insurance company, says it's in a death spiral. You wish to dismiss that evidence to claim my assertion is false, not mostly false, not debatable, not the subject of great controversy, but false. So to do that, you have to not look up the president of Aetna and not credit, or the CEO of Aetna, and not credit him with the authority that goes with that position, even though you don't know basic terms like FEHB and adverse selection. That's what I'm getting to. Could no reasonable person...
Hugh, my turn for a second.
No, it's not. It's an interview. PolitiFact that sideswipes people every day. Just put there and go on with the interview. Could any reasonable person, any reasonable person at all, conclude it's in a death spiral?
The standard is not a trick question.
It's a reasonable person question. It's asked every day in 1,000 courtrooms. Could a reasonable person conclude that Obamacare is in a death spiral?
The authorities who study the healthcare.
That's
law,
not an answer. You're avoiding an answer because journalists hate to have to defend when they do side drive-bys. But I'm just asking: Can any reasonable?
It isn't.
Could a reasonable person conclude that it's in a death spiral? You don't want to answer the question because the answer is what? Of course they could.
It's a term. It is not a term of art, as you say.
Could a reasonable person say that the capital of the United States is Los Angeles? A reasonable person could not say that. No, because they would be wrong. That would be objectively wrong. Can a reasonable person say that Obamacare is in a death spiral?
By the same standard, that is also objectively wrong. So the same argument would hold.
So the CEO of Aetna is objectively wrong.
What is the CEO of Aetna's evidence?
I didn't ask that. I'm just saying you are saying the CEO of Aetna is objectively wrong. That's what you are saying.
Your evidence is that Aetna.
You don't want to answer questions which convict your practices, and I understand that, but it doesn't sound good. Let me ask you this. No. Let me play for you another person who had problems with Obamacare. Let me play for you cut number one.
So you've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world.
Did you fact check that statement?
So what would you fact check?
It was a question, not a debate. Did you fact check that statement?
What's the objective statement that it's
so the
crazy?
So the answer is it's a crazy system.
How would you verify or disprove that?
So did not fact check. I'm just asking. You did not fact check Bill Clinton.
What does that have to do with death spiral?
Okay,
and the
let
fact
me.
Check of you?
It has to do with PolitiFact. That's what we're talking about. It's PolitiFact. Did you fact check Bill Clinton?
That the system is crazy.
That statement. Did you fact check that statement?
That the system is crazy.
No, his whole statement. Any part of it.
That premiums have increased?
No, I'll play it again. Cut number one.
So you've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world.
Did you fact check that statement?
We have certainly fact checked claims about premiums increasing.
Oh, jeez, Aaron, honest to God, you're proving my point. Did you fact check that statement?
We have fact checked claims.
You did not fact check that statement. Here's another statement, cut number three.
We will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period.
Did you fact check that statement?
We have, yes, of course.
What did you conclude?
When was that said?
It was said repeatedly, often, That one was that particular quote is from 2009.
Okay, so that matters, and the answer is
why does that matter?
Because the healthcare plan changed from what. So this is actually great. I'm glad you asked this. I think your listeners could use. We can all kind of have a second here and take a breath and talk about this. So when Barack Obama ran for president, he did not propose an individual mandate. I hope you know
God.
That.
This is what? Just filibustering. I mean, all I want to know is if you fact checked his 2009 statement. Do you know? It's a matter of record whether or not you
I've already said yes.
And when did you fact check it?
We fact checked that claim several times between 2008 and I believe 2014.
Have you ever rated it false?
We gave it the lie of the year in 2014. I think that's a pretty strong condemnation.
And in 2012, when he was running for president, what did you rate it?
2012, I believe we rated it half true.
Okay, thank you. Now, are you familiar with the California budget? I'm interested in proving something about PolitiFact, which you're doing very well, so I'll keep up with it.
Okay,
are you aware of the latest on the California budget?
So we rated that claim half true because...
No. I've moved on. I'm running out of time. I'm less than 15 minutes. Have you done any stories on the California budget with regards to Obamacare?
We've fact-checked 14,000 things over 9 years. I'm not aware of us fact-checking a claim about the California budget. We may have.
With regards to Obamacare. Because on January 18th of this year, $1.9 billion accounting error with regards to Medi-Cal was discovered, creating what is called, and by the AP, a massive hole in the Medi-Cal budget, surprised state lawmakers. Is that evidence of the death spiral of Obamacare, in your view?
I don't know enough about it. A death spiral, again, we'll say this again, a death spiral is when healthy people are leaving the individual non-group market, causing premiums to rise. Therefore, more healthy individuals leave the market.
Causing premiums to rise, it will go to that fact. But what your reporter could have discovered is that death spiral is, in fact, a term of art that many people use in a debate, as was going on. Was it her responsibility to alert her readers that there was a vigorous debate in which I, in fact, alerted the audience that Joy disagreed with my characterization, in which we engaged and she critiqued the source of my primary source, and that we had a full and fair exchange of views on the subject? Was that her responsibility?
No.
All right. If not, why not?
Because we're fact-checking a claim, the statement you made. The responsibility of us is to thoroughly investigate your claim. The responsibility of you is to provide evidence that your claim is correct.
Which I've just done repeatedly by giving the Aetna site, by giving the Cal budget. But now let me ask you, your story, the one that we're talking about, the one that Allison posted, is that representative of your work at PolitiCare, at PolitiFact?
We fact-checked 14,000 claims over 9 years. I would say they are all representative of each other. On the record,
so
sources,
yes,
we list all of our sources.
Now, she contacted my booker at 12:16 on Sunday afternoon. Booker, who is a married mother of two, was at church. She got home from church. She sat down and she eventually checked emails at 6:30. And she wrote me yesterday that I want to read this to you. So that I get it correct, that I do not misstate it. She said, I try not to work on Sundays if I can help it. I usually do a 30 to 40 minutes on Sunday evening just to make sure everything is in order for Monday. So I would have missed the PolitiFact email in their deadline window. Your reporter said she had a 3 p.m. deadline. Why?
It would take, I think, 15 minutes for someone to respond to our query. I think 3 hours was plenty of time. And quite frankly, if someone responded and said, I need 2 extra hours, we would always say yes.
And so you think it is a fair approach by PolitiFact to send an email to my booker at 12:16 on Sunday, tell her it's a deadline at 3 p.m., not check my Twitter feed, send an email to HewittHughHewitt.com, which is a public email that occasionally every 5 years or so we get, not use the comment box, which my other producer measures. You believe that that was professionally responsible?
I think we learned something that you don't personally check Hugh at HughHewitt.com. I think that's good for people to know.
That's not true. I don't check it on Sunday afternoon when I'm on Twitter. I check it during the show to see who's responding to the show. After I'm on Meet the Press, I check the Twitter feed and engage with journalists about it, which is obvious to the world. And had you had a professional standard to check someone's Twitter, you could have done it. But what about sending an email to my booker at 12:16 on a Sunday afternoon and expecting her to respond by 3 p.m.? Is that reasonable?
I think when you're on Meet the Press, I think that is reasonable. I think
you do.
Unfortunately, for your staff, I think you know, when I work on Sunday, my staff has to be available to answer questions and help me. I think that's a reasonable expectation, and you know that when you're. So I'll give you another example. The week before, we were factually.
I don't want another example. I just care about this one. I don't read your site. I don't care about your site. I think your site's a piece of crap.
You read it.
It was brought to my attention by other people. I don't read PolitiFact. I think it's a left-wing hits piece. But let me ask you in closing. Do you know much about George Orwell?
I've read 1984, yes.
Do you know O'Brien?
Yes.
What do you think of O'Brien? What's his job?
I don't understand what the point of these questions
are. Well, it's a literary reference. You said you've read 1984. O'Brien is a critical figure. What do you think of his role?
Let's stick to talking about fact checking.
You don't recall O'Brien, do you?
No, I do. But let's
tell me about him. Tell me about him. You just made a factual statement. You recall him. What do you recall about him?
I'm not going to play this game. Sorry.
Yeah, you don't recall him. Have you read Darkness at Noon?
I'm not going to play this game.
It's just a question. It's a fact. Have you read Darkness at Noon?
It has nothing to do with why I'm on this show.
Oh, it's got everything to do with why you're on this show. If you'd read it, you would know why. But have you not read it?
Please continue.
But I mean, have you not read Darkness at Noon? Are you still there?
I am. Yes.
And so you're not going to answer my question.
I've spent an hour on the
actually,
phone.
No, you've spent 47, actually spent 41 minutes on the show. And I'm asking you about one of the central works of the 20th century about people who try and define truth so as to intimidate their political opponents, so as to shut down political conversation to win before the debate occurs. That's in Darkness at Noon, the importance of words. Have you read it?
I think I've been very gracious, and I'll continue to be gracious as long as we continue having it. Have a nice conversation about
this. I think this is very gracious. I think that Darkness at Noon goes exactly to what you were doing. You don't remember O'Brien. You say you read 1984, but you don't understand what you're doing. This is actually all about PolitiFact, and you're unwilling to admit that you haven't read the central issue about truth in our time.
These are not actual questions. Do you understand that, though?
It is a question. Have you read Darkness at Noon? I asked you questions earlier about Looming Tower. You answered them. Earlier, you told me about other books you read, but you don't want to answer this one. Why is that? Because we're getting to the core of the issue, aren't we?
Okay.
We're getting to the core of what PolitiFact does, and you don't want to debate what PolitiFact does.
I thought we were debating. I thought we were having an interview.
We are. I'm interviewing you, the person who runs PolitiFact, about your abilities to run such a site and to criminalize conversation and to an attempt, I think, to carry forward a left-wing agenda to preemptorily remove what are effective arguments from the public square by refusing to consider contra-evidence and by not investigating thoroughly that which has been said about a controversial subject, because Obamacare isn't a death spiral. I know a lot about death spirals. You don't. Okay. You don't know about the FEHB. You don't know about adverse selection. And yet you will not cite Aetna's CEO as a expert witness.
It's in the item. It's in the item now. You can go.
You won't. I asked you whether he's an expert witness.
I said he was. Yes.
And so if he says it's in a death spiral, is it a false statement for him to say it's in a death spiral?
It's been contradicted by the CBO.
Aaron, did the Aetna CEO make a false statement?
I believe he did, yes.
All right, thank you. See, that's all I wanted. I just wanted to have your opinion of the Aetna CEO. Have you read Darkness at Noon? Why don't you want to answer that question?
Because it has zero relevance. Let's talk about...
Why does Darkness at Noon have zero relevance to PolitiFact?
You're upset about two things. One,
I'm not upset. I'm actually interested in why you are not going to answer the question about Darkness at Noon.
You email qfuhewitt.com. You don't answer. So we learned that, and we will tweet you.
I will give you 5 minutes to make your story. I'll give you a closing statement of 5 minutes. I just want to know about Darkness at Noon, why you won't answer it. After I'm done with this, I'll give you the floor for 3 minutes. Why? No. Whatever you want. Why won't you answer the question about having Red Darkness at noon? I'm curious as to why that's the breaking point for you.
It's not a breaking point. It's not a breaking point. I think we've had a discussion for 46 minutes. I'm feeling pretty comfortable where we're at. It's not a breaking point.
I'm glad to hear that. So why won't you answer that question?
It's because whether I read it or not is irrelevant.
And why, if you have not read
because
it?
Because I'm a fact checker writing a story about Obamacare.
Is there no novel that could inform your job, your understanding of what your job is in society? Is there nothing in art that could possibly inform what you do?
Hugh, every conversation we have with human beings informs us.
So the book could matter. You just said it couldn't matter. If you haven't read it, you wouldn't know that, right? Have you read Darkness at Noon? Vin Scully used to say, let the sound of the crowd roll on. I'm just letting the silence roll on here. You're not going to answer the question. And I'm curious as to why. I really am. What is it about the either having read or not read a book that upsets you so? Is it the fact that we're undermining your credibility? Is it the fact that you haven't known so many things in the course of this interview? Is it the fact that you don't have published standards? Is it the fact that your reporter obviously did not attempt to find me, did not Google Aetna and Death Spiral? Is it the fact that you made up an industry standard that does not exist? Is it the fact that you don't know so many things about that which you claim to have the ability to make a false statement about? Is that what upsets you?
You should be careful. I don't want to have to fact check you again today.
You go ahead, check me, because I think you just go all you want. I've got lefties every day fact checking me. You guys are a left-wing site that try to make things radioactive in advance of Democratic talking points to serve the overall Democratic agenda. Everybody knows what you did with President Obama. Everybody knows that you did not fact check Bill Clinton. Everybody knows, Aaron. That's my point. My point is you've got to get better at your game if you're going to persuade people that you have any credibility and not send emails to people at 12:16 on a Sunday with a 3 p.m. deadline.
When you're working.
And not check me when I'm on the Acela talking to four journalists. You didn't really want to talk to me.
You@.com. Of course we did.
Oh, no, you didn't, Aaron. Honest to God, do you think you're fooling anyone?
Why would I come on this show if I wanted to?
Because I called you out online because people now know the PolitiFact. Even more people know you're just a bunch of hacks. You are literally a bunch of left-wing hacks.
Okay. So just so your listeners know, that both NPR and the Washington Post fact checker, both professional, credible fact checkers, have ruled this same claim as false. The idea that Obamacare is in a death spiral or collapsing or exploding, they both said this was false. This is not PolitiFact in isolation. Of course, I stand by everything that we have in that article and all the objective evidence, whether it's the CBO saying the markets are stable, whether it's Kaiser, which I think is one of the most trusted, respectable healthcare policy analysts saying the market is stable. We have a lot of things to see. Things can change, of course, and I think this thing can evolve. That's why Chuck Todd said, yes, I think that is important.
That's not what he said. You misrepresented again. He said the economic thing. By the way, did you read the CBO report yourself?
Of course.
What did it say about the stability of the health insurance market? Do you have it with you?
I have it on the phone. But
I have it here with me. Let me read it to the audience. Decisions about offering and purchasing health insurance depend upon the stability of the health insurance market. That is, are having insurers, plural, participating in most areas of the country and on the likelihood of premiums not rising in an unsustainable spiral. That's what they said.
Right.
Now, my major argument about why we are in the death spiral. Do you want to hear my major argument about why we're in the death spiral? I would have been happy to have told your reporter had she reached out on Twitter. We have gone from seven.
You're misleading the listener. The same CBO report that you're quoting says that the markets are stable, whether it's the ACHA, AHA.
I'm not misleading the report. I will be happy to read the rest of the paragraph. I was going to the fact that the key part for my evidence is that it requires a stable number of insurers in most areas of the country. The reason I believe it is in a death spiral is because in 2016, 7% of the counties in the United States had one plan. And now, 33%, 1 year later, have one plan. That is expected to rise as more insurers pull out of the single group or small group coverage market. Therefore, it is in a death spiral for those people. That is my number one bit of evidence.
Who's saying it's expected to rise? I'm sorry?
It went from 7 to 33%, so I am projecting forward. And the Aetna CEO made the same assertion, as did Molina Help Group.
But explain to your listeners why that number went from 7 to 33%.
I don't know why I would use that yet.
The reason it did is because the reinsurance programs ended in 2016. So in 2014, 2015, 2016, insurers essentially being subsidized by the government to stay in the plan. That ended. This is just a fact.
Just a fact. And I would be happy to discuss that with you, but I'm going to the point that I had an argument to make. I've made it with Joy many times in public. It is an argument that Aetna's CEO agrees with and that many people agree with and is legitimate. I do not much care what – I like Glenn Kessler quite a lot. I certainly do not care what NPR says, though I like them quite a lot. I have no time at all for PolitiFact, given the standards that you guys use, which are Gletkin-like. Do you know who Gletkin is?
I do not.
That's because you haven't read Darkness at Noon, and he's the central character. Thank you, an admission against interest. Finally, I got it out of you. I would close by saying, read Darkness at Noon, and you will understand what you are doing. What you are attempting to do is make the truth radioactive and to shut down debate. That's what you're trying to do. Last 3 minutes to you.
Thank you, and I won't take 3 minutes, so we can keep going. But I'll simply say that I swear to you that PolitiFact, our job is to actually try to provide antidote for misinformation. And I think as Americans, I think one of the things that we all need to do more of is try to have debates about facts and try to understand what the true facts are. That'll help make huge important policy decisions. And so we rated what you said as false, and I stand by it. But I think that there is a debate and discussion we should be having that is related to how the healthcare law has been implemented and has been going forward. And if we can agree on certain sets of facts, quite frankly, I think that the American public will be a lot better off for it. I mean, I think the fact is that anyone could be a publisher of information today. And so that's really good, but it also allows a lot of people to spread misinformation. And so if we can all work together, I think, to have a discussion about what are true facts, what is legitimate, what is on the record, what is well-sourced, I think the American public will be better off. And they will make good policy choices, whether they support health care law A or B, or they vote for President A or B. And that's all we're trying to do. And I swear to you that is our mission. And we know now that I follow you on Twitter. We will be the best of Twitter friends, I hope.
No, we won't. Because you do not realize that I, though I have no personal animus to you, believe what you are about is totalitarian. You have no idea who Kim Philby is. You have not read and understand who O'Brien is. You have no idea who Gletkin is. You actually have no concept of what you are about, which is to become a ministry of truth, which is an attempt to segregate out those talking points of the left which are most damaging to them, and that you have been in faithful service of the left since you ever first appeared on my radar screen, and that I have no time for PolitiFact, nor does most of the country, because they understand you to be an agenda-driven, even if you do not know it, servant of the left wing. That's what you guys have become, and because you will not listen and are not fair, I have no time for you. That's all.
Can I just say real quickly?
Oh, sure.
The person that we fact-checked more than any other person at PolitiFact is Barack Obama.
And you think somehow that that's significant. You really do. That's what's wrong with journalism. You haven't read Darkness at Noon. You don't know who Kim Philby is. You don't know what an FEHB is. And you think that is significant. See, you don't get a thing. But we're at the end of our time. I want to give you the last minute.
Okay. And I just want to say thanks for having me and enjoying the discussion. I think that, again, Obamacare is not in death spiral. The CEO, Kaiser, independent fact checkers, independent experts who study healthcare say it does not meet the definition of a death spiral. We'll see what happens going forward. And I think, quite frankly, the Trump administration will play a large role in what happens because they can probably help affect this outcome one way or the other.
Thank you very much. So, Obamacare is in a death spiral, but I have plenty of time to defend it on my own. I appreciate it. I got to move on to the next guest. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.